So these are the stories that we think you should know about today.
The Americans clearly have no strategy. The entire nation is being humiliated by Iran's leadership.
An indictment against James Comey. He knowingly and willfully making a threat to take the life of the President of the United States.
We have rarely everything in common with America nowadays, except, of course, language.
When it comes World Cup time, and we're going to have to force ourselves upon them, which we have the right to do, because we don't want to have any crime, we don't want to have any problems.
These stories I'll explain in an interview with a very thoughtful and popular American podcaster with more than 750,000 viewers. She's smart, and she's going to join us live right here on The Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. So hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. Something weird happened yesterday, right? The Chancellor of Germany suddenly came out and started blasting Donald Trump and the United States for what he seemed to call its incompetence in the war in Iran. He said Trump has been humiliated by Iran. And then he basically said he and the United States and Donald Trump have no strategy right now for winning the war. Here's Chancellor Merz.
The Americans clearly have no strategy. And the problem with conflicts like this is always that it's not enough just to get in. You also have to get out. The entire nation is being humiliated by Iran's leadership, especially by these so-called Revolutionary Guards.
Now, I'm sitting there looking at this guy and I'm thinking, why would he say that? Think about it. This is a guy who always dances to Washington's tune. Even if it's off key, hell, his nickname is BlackRock Merz. They put him there, BlackRock. And you could even say that he actually works more for them, for BlackRock, than he does for his own people. And what is BlackRock, other than being the biggest company in the entire world? They are pro-US, they are pro-hegemony, they are pro-Trump, they are pro-US foreign policy. So why would he say that? By the way, they're also more rich and more powerful than almost every single country in the world, including Germany. Here, I can prove it to you. Watch. Look at the numbers. Germany's total assets, as measured by its gross domestic product, you know, GDP, $4.5 trillion. $4.5 trillion. Not bad until you compare it with BlackRock. Their assets, which are almost three times as much at $14.5 trillion. So why is Merz doing this? Why is he saying negative things about his handler, about BlackRock's baby, the U.S., Mr. Trump, the war? Why? Because he needs to. He needs to do that to stay in power so he can continue serving BlackRock. In fact, don't be surprised if he didn't do it on his own. He did it because they told him to do it. He may even have then picked up the phone and called the White House and told Mr. Trump, hey, guess what? I need to criticize you today to stay in power. And BlackRock told me that I had to do it. So let's talk about the why, right? Why would BlackRock make him say those things? Here's why. Because if he doesn't say those things, he will lose his next election. No doubt about it. Look at the numbers. If the election were held in Germany today, he would lose, according to the latest polling. The AfD is beating him bad right now. The polls say he will lose. His approval numbers say he will lose. They're atrocious. And his recession-laden German economy is getting worse by the day. The war in Iran is literally making it worse by the day. A war that, by the way, he, Merz, has always supported until now. So what's he really doing? He's pretending to support the policies of his opponents, the AfD, because they're much more popular than his. They want an end to Trump's war, not him. They want an end to the war with Iran. They want relations with Russia so they can finally have access to inexpensive oil and gas so they can heat their damn homes. Merz is against all of that, always has been. So is he really now changing his mind, or is he pretending to change his mind for purely political reasons, to keep his job? And then, after he's back in office, he'll just go back to his old ways. You tell me. So, by the way, there's something else that you should probably know about the German people that I found out about today as I was Googling. According to the very latest polls, 62% of Germans believe that Israel is committing a genocide, which is fascinating when you think about it, because in the United States, it's only like 51%. But in Germany, it's 62%. Mr. Merz, meanwhile, considers Israel, who is also backed by BlackRock, hint, hint, a political ally. So here's something you should know about that Israel did just recently. Let me show you somebody. This is Claire Day. She's a bureau chief for CBS News, the oldest serving news network in America that is essentially now owned and controlled, by the way, by Israel through its backers in the United States. Day was just fired because she apparently did not pass what's being called the new purity test that's been set by her bosses at CBS. In other words, she didn't support Israel enough, so she was out. Claire Day's been running this London bureau I read this morning for 23 years when I did a little research on her, and she's generally been commended, as far as I can see, for her work for those two decades. Until now. Now she's gone, and who's going to replace her? Ta-da! She's being replaced by this woman, a woman named Shandi Rice. She is an Israeli journalist. Ms. Rice graduated from Yeshiva University. She worked for the Wall Street Journal. She lives in Tel Aviv. Her husband, Dov, is a professor who teaches Jewish studies. Just thought you'd want to know. Now, should we expect fair coverage out of London now that it has a new bureau chief for Palestinians, now that Ms. Rice is in charge? What do you think? All right, I want to talk now about the Trump administration and who they're going after again. The Justice Department has just announced that it is indicting James Comey again. This time, you ready for this? For planning to kill the president of the United States.
A grand jury sitting in the Eastern District of North Carolina returned an indictment against James Comey on two counts. The first count is that on or about May 15th of last year, he knowingly and willfully making a threat to take the life of and to inflict bodily harm upon the President of the United States. Count two, same day, May 15th, 2025, that the defendant, James Comey, knowingly and willfully transmitting in interstate commerce a communication that contained a threat to kill the President of the United States. Both of these counts carry a maximum term of imprisonment of 10 years.
I know what you're thinking. What the hell? Really? Wow. Did Comey just lose it all of a sudden? It's safe to say that Comey overreached when he piled on to that lie about Trump working for Russia. You know, the whole Russia collusion thing that's now been disproven about 150 different ways. It's clear that Comey was wrong to do that. But wanting to murder the president, that's different. Well, here's the evidence that is being reported that they are presenting. Apparently, Mr. Comey was on a beach last year, and he or somebody that he was with gathered up some shells and spelled out these numbers, 86 and 47. 47 because Trump is the 47th president, 86 because it's kind of a slang term we use in America for getting rid of somebody or removing something, like the Miami Dolphins just got rid of their quarterback. They 86'd them. Or what happened to that new marketing plan? Oh, the new CEO 86'd it. That's usually how it's used, right? That's how it's used. But in this case, the Justice Department, no doubt under Mr. Trump's orders, is saying that 86 means a plan to murder the president. Look, I'm no fan of Comey for what he did on Russiagate. Sloppy, dishonest. But murder? Come on. This is the second time that the Trump administration has tried to indict the former FBI director. The last time, a judge just threw it out. Through all the charges. So, look, was Comey wrong to go along with that seemingly fake accusation during Mr. Trump's first term made by none other than Hillary Clinton, his opponent? Of course he was. Of course he was. Would Mr. Trump also be wrong for a vendetta against Mr. Comey, charging him with a crime for a social media post showing a bunch of rocks on a beach? Again, I ask, what do you think? So here's something else I thought you ought to know. Amnesty International is issuing a travel warning to people who are thinking about going to the United States. Now, this is serious. Travel warnings are usually issued in places where there are actual conflicts or wars. Iran, Iraq, Israel, Gaza, that's what I found today. Ukraine. Also Belarus, I saw. It's simply political in that case, as in the West doesn't like the president of Belarus, so they proclaim that the country is dangerous, even though it's not. I was just there, not dangerous at all. But the U.S.? Too dangerous? Really? Well, that's what Amnesty International is warning those thinking about going to the United States for the World Cup to consider. In fact, here's what they're saying will happen to you if you go. Serious risk of cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment, and in some cases, death while in immigration detention facilities or custody. Suppression of speech. Increased surveillance if you go to America. Invasive social media screening and searches of all your electronic devices if you go to America. Wow. By the way, you got to read this warning. Look it up. It goes on to say that the Trump administration's, quote, rising authoritarianism and increasing violence pose serious risks to all who may visit the country. It's, according to some reports, especially true in light of Mr. Trump's comments recently that he's going to send federal agents and Border Patrol into the cities, into the stadiums that are hosting the World Cup games to arrest immigrants.
We're going to have to do something when it comes World Cup time, and we're going to have to force ourselves upon them, which we have the right to do, because we don't want to have any crime. We don't want to have any problems for the Olympics and the World Cup.
So with or without this warning from Amnesty International and other worldwide agencies, travel to the United States under President Trump is already way down, did you know? Hotels in about 11 cities where these World Cup events are going to be held are slashing their prices because they can't book the rooms. In fact, tourism in and of itself in the United States, I learned this morning as well when I did a little follow-up on this story, is at record lows right now.
Tourism to the U.S. is on the decline. The U.S. is set to lose $12.5 billion because of it. Traveler spending here is already down 22.5%.
So revenue from visitors to the U.S. is down. Oh, by the way, so are airline bookings. Fewer visitors from Europe and Asia are traveling to the United States, respectively, by 5% and 4%. And much of that is because the United States is now being perceived worldwide as dangerous, but also because of how it's being perceived inside the United States. Even Americans themselves are looking at themselves and looking at their policies. Look at this. Look at this. It's a Democratic ad, mind you. But look at this Democratic ad in New York, how it illustrates that.
I had a really good time today.
Yeah, me too. I really look.
What are you doing?
She's coming with us.
What are you talking about? Who are you?
I'm your Republican congressman. Now that we're in charge, we're rounding up illegals.
She was born here. She's a citizen.
I don't care. She looks like one of them. But don't worry. When she's in prison in El Salvador, she'll have lots of company.
I know. Really crappy acting. It's a political ad. It's spoofy. It's corny. I get it. But it hits home with a lot of Americans. It's effective. A lot of Americans who felt the fear and or seen the change in America's messaging from one of welcome to America to get out. Ronald Reagan spoke of the U.S. as that city on a hill with a beacon shining, its light for all who are seeking comfort to see. Is the light dimming? You tell me. Finally, to a story about a king. The king of comedy in this case. You're going to see what I mean in a minute. The U.S. Congress is comprised of about 435 very old men who are almost all corrupt. Yesterday, wouldn't you know, they invited a very old man from one of the most corrupt families in the world to read to them. Literally, to read to them. Their guest reader, just like them, also does no real work and lives off the backs of hardworking citizens who really do work. Here he is, reading to them, to the U.S. Congress like their school children.
Now, as you may know, when I address my own parliament at Westminster, we still follow an age-old tradition and take a member of parliament hostage, holding him or her at Buckingham Palace until I am safely returned.
Okay, not funny. By the way, as an American, I've always wondered why our Congress doesn't invite the people who really matter in this world. People our elected officials could maybe learn something from. Look, you don't have to agree with the people you invite. You don't even have to like the people you invite. Why not invite, for example, the president of China? I'd want to hear what he has to say. Or the president of Russia. Or the president of Iran. Modi, for example, would be cool from India. Here's an idea. Just today, I woke up to the news that the UAE has just dropped out of OPEC. Wow. Why not invite the leader of the UAE, Sheikh bin Zayed? He'd show up. He'll talk to you. Instead, who do we get? The leader of a dead empire reading horrible jokes that seem to live in some other century to the leaders of a dying empire. This guy.
As Oscar Wilde said, we have rarely everything in common with America nowadays, except, of course, language. These days, we look after our guests rather well, to the point that they often do not want to leave.
I need to wake up my guest now, in case she was watching that. Joining us now to talk about this is Kim Iverson, who's not part of the mainstream media. She has a show on YouTube with almost 800,000 subscribers. She's great. She's smart. She's courageous. And she's live, joining us now here. I'm so sorry I put that on just before we came on. I thought you might need a little nap.
Well, certainly, I got a great laugh out of it. I don't know about you, but I thought that that was really incredibly funny. I thought he really should do a stand-up routine.
It's like, do you agree with me? I mean, why is it? I mean, we've got this incredible country with this incredible system and this great constitution, and our Congress invites this guy and Netanyahu every year. And you don't have to like Xi. You don't have to like Putin. You don't have to like Bereshkian. You don't have to like Modi. But they're current. They matter. Why don't we have these people come and talk to our politicians? Isn't that crazy?
They're the ones who support the wars, or they encourage the wars. I mean, in Netanyahu's case, he's the one who's actually encouraging the wars, creating the wars. The Brits, they support the wars. So, you know, we're just a little club, and it is obviously shrinking, and it's shrunken down now pretty much to the three, the UK, the United States, and Israel. We're losing allies left and right. So, I mean, they don't want to come because they might actually criticize, and so we don't want to invite them because we only want people who are going to sing us praises.
Yeah, that's a problem. Here's another situation with somebody that I wish we wouldn't be talking to so much, the EU. So look at the story I just saw. I wanted to ask you about this because it just broke earlier. The EU is now sanctioning Israel. We've got the headline. Can we put that up, Gene? Have we got that? It's the EU sanctioning Israel. There it is. EU ready to sanction Israel over Russian vessel that's carrying stolen Ukrainian grain, right? It's kind of really a boring story. It turns out that the grain came from that part of Ukraine that Russia has now been in, which Russia argues is Russia, whatever. The fact is, this is what they're finally punishing Israel for. Look at this. This is a guy named, I have no idea who this guy is, but I like what he put out. This is a guy named Mark Potenka. He's an MEP. He says, they're not sanctioning Israel for genocide, not for genocide, not for war crimes, not for occupation, not for colonization, not for invasion, not for torture, but they're finally, finally putting sanctions on Israel, and it's for grain. It's like, what do you make of that, Kim?
It's hard to wrap our minds around. I think that obviously the EU is feeling some pressure from the people because the people in Europe are very much against Israel. But the leadership is still feeling tentative, wanting to support. They're not really quite ready to go against the United States. They're kind of hedging a little bit. And you kind of notice that in a lot of their statements where they're sort of one toe in, dipping in to see, you know, what if we defy the great empire? What would happen to us if we defy it a little bit? And then they go back to just supporting the empire again. And so this seems to be one of those, well, maybe we could dip our toe into getting upset with Israel, but just over something else. You know, we don't want to accuse them of a genocide. You know, it's just very, the leadership is very disconnected from the people. And that's in on both sides of the pond, right? I mean, you've got America, the leadership is very much not in tune with the American people. EU leadership is also not in tune with the European people.
You know,
and this is the makings of a revolution, by the way. I mean, that's when we see historically when people finally rise up and say, we've had it with our governments and kind of overthrow it to something different, which, you know, I'm not necessarily advocating for that, but that's the makings of that.
Do you think it's more apt to happen in Europe or in the United States or both at the same time, given how things are going right now?
Europe, much more likely to happen to start in Europe. The Europeans are much more, they're more aggressive, right? When they really are upset, like the French, for example, are extremely aggressive. When they're upset with their government, they show it. I mean, the cars are burning in the streets when the French get upset. But in the United States, it's a larger country. It would be really, it's a lot more difficult for the U.S. And it's going to be an interesting historical experiment. I mean, over time, every country or every empire on earth has seen its decline. It's just, how would the United States see that decline? And I don't see it happening in some popular revolution or popular overthrowing or popular demand by the people so as much as I just see sort of a slow decline like the Roman Empire, which just slowly kind of shrinks away into irrelevancy, and it could take 100 years.
You know, it's interesting. I'm thinking of the story I did at the beginning of the show about Friedrich Merz, BlackRock Merz, as they call him. We're kind of shocked by the approval numbers for Mr. Trump in the United States, which are very, very low, 33 to 36, depending on what you look at. This guy's in the, like, mid to low 20s. Macron is in, like, a 19. Starmer's somewhere around 12. I mean, it really makes your point. I mean, the people of Europe hate their politicians. They just do.
Yeah.
Why is it that, I mean, how's it gotten to that point? And what causes that? What do they see in these guys that makes them hate them, you think?
Well, it's just historical. I mean, we see these sorts of historical cycles over and over and over again. And it's just that the people at the top take more resources. They stop listening to the people. They don't listen to the grievances of the people. They start helping others other than the people they're supposed to be serving, which is what we're seeing. I mean, we're seeing a lot of this, oh, we've got to help Ukraine, right? So Europe has just been funneling tons of money into Ukraine and ignoring the fact that the European people are suffering from higher prices and they have their own grievances. They want to take care of the people in Europe. They're seeing a flood of immigration in when the people are struggling, and whenever people are struggling and they feel like we can't even take care of ourselves and now you're letting all these outsiders in, you know, that's a problem. It's not because the outsiders are outsiders. It's more because the people inside feel like we don't even have enough for us, so how can we possibly allow others in? And Americans are feeling that same sort of thing. I mean, when things are abundant, then they're like, okay, great. Yeah, we need more people. We need more workers. We need more, you know, whatever. But we're just not in that era right now. So I think it's just whenever power always corrupts, absolutely, unfortunately. And so we've seen these institutions grow in power, and after a while, they stop listening to the people and the people start rising up. And so now we're starting to see that. And with your story with Merz, what's really interesting with that one is you know, he's adopting the language of the AfD, and he's trying to kind of adopt some of their points in order to gain in popularity. And that is really scary. I mean, we have to remember that the people at the top are very clever. And we've watched this happen now in the United States. I mean, Trump ran on a message of populism, no more wars.
Yeah.
And what are we in right now? We're in a war with Iran. We're in the big kahuna of wars that we didn't, well, Russia would be the big one. But Iran was the one that they've been eyeing for a long time that many of us have said, we absolutely do not want that war. But they were able to grab onto the message. And then ultimately in the end, the neocons were so clever. And I saw this also happen with the progressives when AOC ran and she was like, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to stick it to Nancy Pelosi. And one of the first things she did when she got into office was she protested in front of Nancy Pelosi's office, only to later just get co-opted by the establishment and become the establishment voice. And now that's what we've seen with the Trump populist movement is now the neocons still were able to gain control. So Merz can adopt all of the AfD language that he wants. People should be very skeptical. At the end of the day, he might look like he's going in that direction, but the neocons, the neolibs, they'll ultimately win in the end, and they'll just go back to the way they were, and they'll say, see, we tricked you.
That's so smart, what you just said, because essentially what you're saying to the German people is, if they're listening, don't let it happen to you what happened to us, right? I mean, Americans were fooled into thinking that Trump was going to be a sheep, but he was actually a wolf in sheep's clothing when it comes to this war in Iran. He said, no more wars. I'm not going to get into anything like this. And he actually was as bad or maybe worse than the other guys. And Mertz is doing that. What you're saying is Mertz is doing that same thing right now. He's turning to the people and say, oh, don't worry, my good people. I hate this thing in Iran. When he's been for it the whole time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's,
yeah.
We're
just being duped. And they pay, by the way, they have these think tanks that are making millions and millions of dollars. They're paid millions of dollars to figure out how do we infiltrate the mind of the voter to get the voter to go for us. And then we can slowly bring them back to where we want them, really.
Yeah.
And they figure out those strategies, and they're very clever at it.
Hey, speaking of what's going on in the United States, what did you make of this whole... You know, I've been invited many times to the Correspondents' Dinner. Remember when I was at CNN and when I worked as a correspondent or as a host on NBC? I never went. I always thought it was a horrible trade-off. It's basically, I'll give you favorable coverage and you give me access. And to sit around and get drunk with politicians when you're supposed to be covering was just, I just never thought it was a good look. So the whole thing, I think, stinks. But this guy, Cole Allen, and the way it was handled and the very lack security, I'm not saying it was a false flag. I'm not ready to make any accusations. I haven't read anything that proves anything like that. But the whole thing has been kind of weird, hasn't it? What is your take? What have you been telling your listeners?
Well, I mean, you're not willing to call it a false flag, but I'm kind of willing to call it a false flag.
No, hey,
well,
go.
You know, look, I mean, more is adding up against it being, I think that this guy really legitimately wanted to do what he was doing. I think probably the Secret Service and the government knew that he was planning on doing this, and they just let him through rather than stopping threats in advance. They probably knew, they saw this guy coming, and they just figured, oh, it's okay, we'll stop him. I mean, there's just too many things adding up to it being used, which, by the way, for political capital, for a ballroom, which is really bizarre. It's like, if you're going to have an assassination attempt, I would think you'd use it for something of more value than a ballroom, but they're using it on a ballroom. Yeah. So they're saying, oh, see, this is why we need a ballroom. But you see them in the press conference immediately after, and many people in the administration who were potentially going to be shot at him, if you really believe that, you'd be shaken up. And they're sitting there kind of smirking, a little bit of smiles on their faces. Hmm. You've got this shooter that never fired a shot. It now turns out that it was Secret Service who fired shots.
I didn't know I didn't. So I thought the shots went both ways. This is new information that you're sharing with me.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming out now. It needs to be verified, so I'll just put that caveat on that. But now it's coming out that it looks like the Secret Service was the one firing the shots, and that Cole Allen never even got any shots
off. That makes a big difference. I was about to refute you with that very point. I was going to say, but Kim, I understand they may have set this whole thing up, but you can't risk some guy getting off shots because people could die in that situation, I'm thinking. But if it's true that he never got off any shots, all he did was run across a ballroom and fall down, then...
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing just sort of stinks. I mean, Donald Trump... there's an image, we're not really sure, we're still looking to verify it, but there, when they rushed him off the stage, there was somebody then backstage watching, and that seemed a little, and some are saying it was Donald Trump, we're still looking to verify who was standing in the corner behind the curtain. It does, from a silhouette, look like Donald Trump, but that would be a little bit bizarre. But again, you know, there's more things adding up to suspicion, and I think that with his record low numbers, with this assassination attempt in Butler really boosting him, I could see why very sinister people would think, which is a lot of people in our government, unfortunately, would think, hey, maybe this would be a good idea if we just know absolutely no one would get hurt. And if we know that no one would get hurt and if we stop the threat or, you know, I mean, I don't know who the masterminds are that would actually plan that sort of thing. But I think that whether it is a false flag or not, the fact that so many of us even think it might be a false flag just goes to show how little confidence we have in our own government and what we think our government is willing to do against us in order to gain our support.
You know, and then there's this possibility, and I'll just throw this out there as well. Kennedy was against Israel having nuclear weapons, and JFK was killed. Just putting that out there. George Bush was a very popular president, and then all of a sudden, one day, he was against Israel as well, for the record. And then the media decided that the biggest story in the world was no new taxes, and they literally destroyed the man with that slogan, which they played over and over and over again. You could make a similar argument about Richard Nixon, for example. So any president who's ever challenged Israel has ended up kind of in a bad way. I do wonder sometimes if the messenger is maybe coming from outside the United States when it comes to these things. What do you think?
Well, I mean, that's certainly one suspicion. Many people now are looking at the Butler assassination attempt and thinking maybe that was a false flag as well. Maybe that was staged, or maybe that was a message that was sent of, look at how close we could get to actually offing you. And that potentially that was a warning shot, and that maybe this correspondence dinner thing was also sort of a warning, like, hey, we can still get close to you. We're still able. I don't know exactly how a ballroom's going to solve that. I mean, certainly Donald Trump's going to be seen outside of the ballroom from time to time, unless he's just going to hide out in the ballroom for the rest of his presidency, or every president's going to do that. But I mean, certainly there were circulating images of Cole Allen wearing an IDF sweatshirt. My thinking is that was AI generated, but what if it wasn't? What if it was real? What if he really was a supporter of the IDF? We know he was very Christian, and a lot of times, you know, Christian evangelicals, and that's what he was, a Christian evangelical, very much could have been pro-Israel. And perhaps this was not about his liberalness or, you know, whatever, but it could have been about, hey, we still have to help Israel, and you're talking about ending the war and doing a deal with Iran, and that's not what we want. Or, I mean, there's so many different, my inclination is to not, I don't think that's what this was, but Butler maybe that one. You know, I have a lot of suspicions. I don't have any evidence. I can't prove things. But what we can do is we can look at evidence and say things just don't add up the way they're supposed to. And when they don't add up and things don't all make sense, then I think we have the right to question everything and to say, until everything makes sense, I'm not just going to go with the story that they're telling me to go with when things are not adding up. And that's with this Cole Allen assassination attempt, things are just not adding up. And with Butler, Pennsylvania, things are just not adding up even. And even just Trump going into this war with Iran doesn't even really add up. No. And so a lot of people are asking questions about that, like what compelled him to do this?
You know, I think what I'm hearing you talk about is something I guess we could call, for the lack of another term, institutional credibility. Where has that gone? Americans used to be told, we're going to war, I'm there, 90%, man. Okay, no questions asked, we're going, right? The media, Walter Cronkite, whoever your fave is, are going to go on the air and they're going to say something. It's important. Just today, we're having a news conference to indict this guy Comey. Well, that's got to be a real thing. The first thing I think of is vendetta. It's almost like you go down the line, and it's not just me. It's, I think, all of us in some way or another just look at everything and start to doubt. My first question is a question rather than any sense of realness. Do you agree?
We're certainly, like with the Comey thing, this is to say, oh, well, he obviously was threatening the president with this 86-47. that sounded a lot like Democrats when they were saying, you know, people that were outside of the Capitol building on January 6th were chanting, you know, we've got to fight. We have to fight. People say that all the time. We have to fight for our rights. We have to fight for democracy. We have to fight for this. We have to fight for that. And they don't actually mean physical violence. Mm-hmm. They just mean we have to fight to keep our rights. We have to fight for this. And they use that. And, you know, Democrats use that and said, see, these people are violent. And then Comey puts that 86. And like you said, I mean, I worked in the restaurant business back in the day when I was in college, and 86 just meant we're out of it. Like, it's gone. Yeah. We take it off the menu, right? Not we're going to just kill it and make sure it never comes back to life. That's not what that means. And they're trying to twist that. And it just, I think that this, people were very fed up when Democrats were doing it. They were hoping for change when they voted Donald Trump in, thinking that things would return to normal, thinking that we would get away from the insanity that a lot of the left were bringing in. And now what we're seeing is the right is just insane. They're just choosing different things to be insane about. And it is vendetta-based, which is what the right, left was doing. And they're, you know, lying to us and changing narratives. And they do censor. They just censor on different things. Like, the right censors about Israel, and the left censors about, you know, they censored about COVID or something else. But They just pick and choose what their religion is, I guess.
One of my staff, one of my producers showed me something just before we went on the air, and I was so interested in it, and I thought I'd share it with you. Because I'm about to make the very same point that you just made, but it's illustrated by this very, I guess, effective ad that's being run by the Democrats against the Republicans. Here it is. It's called the I'm a GOP Congressman campaign ad. Here it is.
Oh, dude.
Oh, my God.
What are you doing?
Dude, hey, what are you doing?
I'm your Republican congressman. Big oil gives me millions, so I'm killing electric cars.
You know, yeah, funny, effective, good. I understand what they're doing and everything. But it's such bull crap. They're implying that only Republicans take money from donors and from big oil and from Israel and from blah, blah, blah. I could go on and on. I'd be here till tomorrow. That's bull crap. The Democrats take just as much. Both parties are basically corrupt and on the take. How am I wrong?
No, I mean, you're not wrong, and that's what the American people are waking up to. More and more Americans right now are moving to being independent politically. So when you ask people now, what are you, left or right? And they're like, you know, I'm just politically homeless. I mean, you hear that more as an answer now today than we've ever heard it before. There are fewer people in both camps, Republican and Democrat. And Democrats lost a lot of people during the Biden administration. A lot of those people voted for Donald Trump. Mm. A lot of Republicans now are losing it and walking away from the Republican Party for the same sort of reasons. They just feel lied to. They feel like their rights are being infringed upon. Their lives are not being made better, that the political party values other things over them. And so we're now seeing just this mass exodus. The big question is, where do people who have now left both political parties that are in the middle now, kind of homeless, where do they go and what can they do? And what we're seeing in that political ad is Democrats taking advantage and saying, okay, which Republicans did too, mm-hmm. right? Which is, we've got all these politically homeless people, we can maybe capture them. But Democrats already lost a lot of people. They were first to lose them. And now Republicans are losing them. I don't think that the people now that are kind of swimming in this netherland of what are we politically, I don't think that they're going to suddenly swim to the shore of the Democrats or go back to Republicans. And that is going to be a big fundamental shift in American politics. It'll be very interesting to see what happens going forward. But I think we're witnessing a very fundamental shift in how Americans view their political system.
But there has to be a fundamental shift within the political system, because what we have now, it seems to me, as an American, is crap. It doesn't matter if you elect a Republican or a Democrat, because in the end, neither one of those will actually make the important decisions for the country. The decisions are being made by some kind of administrative state that rules. In essence, I was just recently in Belarus, and I talked to a guy who's supposed to be a dictator. I found that most of the people there are comfortable with him. 60 to 70% of the people say, yeah, he's kind of this, but, you know, we like the guy. I almost got, you know, Kim, I mean, I know we've talked before about these kinds of things, but I almost get a feeling that we're the damn system that's broken. You know, is he a dictator or are we a dictator? Is it just that our dictator doesn't have a face and a name? It's a system.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely not in charge of our government. So what do you call that, right? Yeah. I mean, when the people are no longer living in an actual democracy, and that's obvious because we voted for no more war and we're sitting with more war. We voted for the release of the Epstein files, and we have not, I mean, we've been getting them because of Thomas Massie and Ro Khanna. But if it weren't for them fighting for the release of those files, the people that we actually elected to release them, the Trump administration, wasn't going to do it. They were calling it a Democratic hoax. Mm-hmm. So we voted for all of these things. We voted for lower gas prices, ended up with higher gas prices. We voted for better infrastructure. Now it's going to the Middle East. So obviously we're living in a dictatorship of some sort. We're living in something that is absolutely not a democracy. If it were a democracy, we'd get the things we voted for. But we don't ever seem to get the things that we vote for, time and time and time again. And I'm not sure when the system broke down, but it's now obviously broken, I think, to most Americans. I mean, I'm hearing people that were like staunch vote blue, no matter who, diehard Democrats saying, you know what? Both parties are terrible now. I mean, everybody's just feeling very disillusioned by the government. But the big question is, you know, and I think there's got to be some sort of a political revolution where people vote. There's a lot of people that come together and say, we're just going to be true truth tellers. We're going to do the things that the people voted us in for. in our respective districts, we will just run on whatever party is more popular, you know, is the dominant party in that area. So if you live in California, you run as a Democrat. If you live in Texas, you run as a Republican. And instead, it's sort of like a coalition of people that say, we're just going to take the country back. And until people come together, I think, and do that, we're just going to continue on in the path that we're on.
You're so great. You explained that so well. And you're right in the middle, too, right? You're more like a Ron Paul person than you are a Democrat or anybody else. And I think that's really important. I mean, I almost think that's kind of where we are as Americans right now. And I am seeing what you're talking about, right? With my family members, with my friends, with people I talk to all the time. I just don't know, is it Israel or Epstein, or both at the same time? Which is the thing that is the thing that is poisoning MAGA, for example, which I thought, you know, MAGA was a good movement in its essence, right?
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, these people are saying, wait a minute, I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime, where like 55% of the American people are saying, we need to separate ourselves from Israel. Israel sucks and they're committing a genocide. I never thought I'd hear Americans say that. I'm also hearing Americans say, you know, the president of the United States has done some horrible things and he needs to pay for it. And they're going after the guy who said he was going to go after the people who did those things. These things are happening at the same time, aren't they?
And our president, like an emperor, is raving on about a ballroom on top of it, like, let them eat cake. I mean, it's one of those moments where Americans are suffering. Americans are suffering with high gas prices, high grocery prices. There's fear that their children are going to be sent off to war in the Middle East for Israel. And Donald Trump can't stop talking about a ballroom. I mean, this is very much in the essence of the era of the kings and the czars and the emperors. And we're back in that, where it's just totally and completely disconnected from the American people to say, oh, the priority is a ballroom, an opulent ballroom of all things. I mean,
it's amazing how much I see of this. I was a correspondent at NBC, at CBS, I mean, at Fox. I come from the mainstream media. And I got to tell you, my dear friend Kim, now that I've had a chance to travel the world a little bit, spend some time and see Russia, I've been in China, I've been in the Middle East, I've gotten to know the Indian delegations, and I've traveled through Southeast Asia, and I've seen all these different countries. These countries we made fun of. I used to make fun of them, right? I always thought, you know, the Chinese are just, you know, cheating, and the Russians are just bullies, and all the people in the Middle East are just radical terrorists, blah, 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 blah. Man, I was so full of crap. What I'm kind of finding is that in these countries, they have an order. They have, you know, some of the things we don't have, they have. Every single one of those countries that I just mentioned in, if a woman gets pregnant, she gets maternity leave provided by her government. Every single person who works has at least 4 weeks vacation. You know, I mean, every single person has some kind of health care plan. We're the richest country in the world. We're giving hundreds of billions of dollars to other countries. We don't have that stuff, Kim.
Yeah.
It's like, how great are we and how bad are they?
Well, I will say, though, with all of this, that I am proud to be an American. Well, I don't know if I'm proud right now with what we've done, what we're doing. But I will say that.
I hear the struggle. I say the same thing.
Right.
I know you've got 800,000 people who are following you, a million if you add all your social media, and I'm sure you hear from them all the time. Because I say the same thing all the time, you know? I'm an American, damn it. I came from a communist country. I came from Cuba. And America helped my parents and helped me, and that's why I went to school. And I want to believe in that, and I believe in the Constitution. But then I look around and I go, oh, God, what the hell is this?
We have a lot of problems. There's no doubt we have a lot of problems.
Yeah.
But I still do think we are the greatest country on earth. And I do think that we have the greatest constitution on earth, as long as we adhere to it. And I think we have the greatest governmental system on earth, as long as we actually adhere to it.
But how do we get it back?
The problem is,
how do we get it back?
Well, that's the thing, was we have to get it back from the big money interests that have been able to. You know, the one great thing that's made America great has been the capitalism. But the problem with the capitalism is it's been unregulated to the point where literally everything is for sale, including our politicians, including our land from the farmers, the homes from the people that, you know, the great American families that would otherwise be homeowners who are now made into renters because of BlackRock. Or, you know, we have this fantastic system that allows people to get wealthy, that allows people to live the American dream. But unfortunately, without guardrails, it has allowed a lot of abuse into the system and a lot of, you know, America's for sale, almost every single inch of it. And that has been the problem. So if we can get control over that, I do believe that America is the greatest country on earth. I love plenty of other countries, but you know, I live part of the time in Italy, but I still think the United States has the greatest constitution, has the greatest governmental system. So as when it works, and so as long as we can make it work.
So maybe we close with this. The two things that I think suck right now about our country, our media and our politicians. And somehow they need to either be made inconsequential, which I think is already happening with the media, thanks to people like you and my friend Tucker and my friend Candace and others, Judge, et cetera. They either need to be made inconsequential, the media, and that's already happening, but also the politicians either need to be changed or made inconsequential, like they are in a lot of other countries, by the way. You know, it's only in our country that people in Congress are in the news because they wore a suit that's interesting, or they wore... In most people, it's the cabinet and the president and the Congress, or the people who work in the legislatures. They're just like bureaucrats. Nobody knows who they are. Why do they even get so much coverage in America? Maybe they should be made somewhat inconsequential, right?
Well, I think actually our politicians should be made more consequential, because right now they don't do anything but campaign constantly.
That's
and
true.
That seems to be the only thing that they care about. They don't want to vote on anything. They've instead, Congress in particular, has really just sort of deviled out what they're supposed to be doing to the executive branch and a bunch of executive orders, or to the judicial branch, saying, well, just rule on it. You rule on it. You rule on it. When Congress actually should be doing a lot of the work. So I think the people need to hold Congress more accountable. We need 530 Thomas Masseys is what we need.
Yes.
Rather than one.
Yes.
And that, I think, will correct our government.
Say it loud, say it proud. Hallelujah. I couldn't agree with you more. There are a few. There are a few. And Massey, he's the best of the best, I think, when it comes to this kind of stuff. Not the only one. Kim, you are fabulous. Hey, thanks so much for joining
us.
Thank you. Let's do this again, my friend.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Kim Iverson, she's a superstar. All right, let's take time now to take a closer look at what you've been saying, as a matter of fact, about some of the things that we've been doing lately, your comments, following my conversation with Professor Mohammad Mirandi. Oliver Dan 4311 says, even the U.S. military is telling Trump not to strike Iran. Trump doesn't follow advice from his military. He takes orders from his Jewish masters, he writes. Thanks, Oliver, but I think certainly Zionist masters might be a better way to describe it. Imperator Caesar says, Imperator? Wow. I'm sure Iran, as he says, Iran, knows it is dealing with a deranged Trump administration. The next attack will come soon. The world will suffer from Emperor Trump. Breaker of Chines says, you are a traitor, Sanchez. You are no different than Tucker Carlson, giving the enemy a platform. Well, sir, I'm a journalist, Mr. Breaker. My platform is truth. Ghost of Nimrod J. Smith says, it really doesn't seem that Trump is being affected by any grave warning from the regime or its functionaries. They aren't a regime, Mr. Nimrod. They are a government. Stop using that word. Why don't we just start there? Then maybe we can talk. MO2Easy says, Iran's greatest weakness is accepting ceasefires when it's winning on the battlefield. U.S.'s greatest strength is knowing that Iran will always accept a ceasefire. Well said. Kostak Until says, funny how all the Western media companies speak to terrorists from Iran while they don't have internet and think that it is normal. For starters, sir, you think I'm Western media? I'm a Western media guy? Not sure how I want to take that. And finally, Michael GTW81 says, great interview, Rick. As always, keep up the good work. And as you say, I'll see you next time. Thank you. Finally, somebody said something nice about me who's not related to me. And even they sometimes don't. As usual, all the feedback is appreciated. You can check out my social media. We're on X. We're on Spotify. We're on BitChute. Thanks so much for being with us. See you next time.